Hi, I'm Malak Fouad, and welcome to What I Did Next from A&T Media. We're currently on our season break, and we'll be back with new episodes in March. In the meantime, I wanted to share my conversation with soprano Fatma Saeed. Fatma talked to me about her incredible achievements, burning out, and a lot more. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, X, or on LinkedIn for updates. And you can also find longer video clips from my conversations on YouTube. Here's my chat with Fatma. Some people are very much Instagram followers. Some are much more Twitter followers. Which do you prefer? And if you could only pick five people to follow, who would they be?
It was hard when I thought about that question because I'm not very attached to social media anyway. So if I don't follow anyone on social media, I don't have a personal Facebook account, for example. I don't have WhatsApp anymore. I'm like trying to.
So these are conscious
decisions that I've always had, and I have like my phases, and social media does have a lot to do with my work. So that's why I cannot be completely disconnected. So I'm quite light when it comes to social media. Since I love to dance, I follow like a tango, the art of tango. That's one of the accounts I follow that I really enjoy because it shows you like slow motion steps that I really like to
practice
see.
And see.
So that's important to me. Tango is very important to me. And I follow another account called Classic Divinity, which is a really cool page because it shows you like parts of performances of famous opera singers that are singing 10 seconds of an opera aria, for example, and then they would show you the same 10 seconds sung by another singer and by another. So it's really interesting to see.
So you can compare that.
Exactly.
Way.
It's really interesting to compare that exact part. Like,
so wow.
Also,
are you on
fanatic.
It?
No, I'm not on
You're
it.
You're not on it.
They talk about also singers that have been like,
that are no longer around.
That had a perfect technique, actually. So it's really nice to follow that. I would follow my sister just to make sure that I'm in touch with the family because my
family is older or younger than you?
She's younger than I. There is an account called Greatest Reactions that is really funny. They just post, you remember something like America's Funniest Home Videos?
Yeah.
That exact type, more like the 21st century.
So the kind of thing you can look at in an airport when you're waiting for a plane.
Yeah, just, I'm not very deep when it comes to social media. Yeah. So it's stuff that would make me smile or laugh or stuff that I would like to share with other friends and family that are light.
And tell me, Fatma, why did you stop using WhatsApp? I find that interesting. Why is that?
It's the first time to be public about that. That's been only since maybe 2 months.
Were you being hounded by messages by a lot of people or?
No, I felt that it's I don't know if I should say this publicly. No, but I feel connecting with people has been so easy that we've been taking it for granted. And I feel much happier without it because I realized that I'm actually in touch with the people who I want to be in touch with and who want to be in touch with me in a very,
in a more personal, real way.
And my family was so mad at me that I canceled the application or that
because
I deleted
the family groups that you're missing out on and things like that. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, because you're not in the group anymore, you weren't up to date with this and that. And it was a bit difficult. I thought I would deactivate it or delete it for 2 weeks at the beginning because I had a very intense working period. And then afterwards, I realized, why would I, like, I was so happy these 2 weeks.
Really?
Yeah, I woke up not looking at my phone.
You didn't touch your phone as much.
At all. Yeah. I was very disconnected from my phone, and I thought that was very healthy.
Wow.
And I loved it.
Interesting.
And I'm more, like, if you ask my friends, I'm not the best person to be in touch with people at all.
Yeah.
But I make it a point that when I call or when I send a message, when I meet someone, I'm there 100%. Mm-hmm. I write emails more now.
Okay.
And I think that's also very nice because I feel you need to dedicate time to do that.
I find it really interesting because for someone relatively young, you know, the idea of being connected all the time, it's so integral now to everyone's being that people can't imagine not being connected anymore.
Yeah.
So it's actually very refreshing to hear that from
you. I don't know. Maybe I have WhatsApp again in a few weeks.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say that this will stay forever, but I'm definitely enjoying the break. It's like having a break from social media.
Yeah, of course. So it's very similar.
Yeah.
Very similar. Because I have two children who are teenagers and the phone is their life.
Yeah.
And it's extremely disturbing. And it really worries me because, you know, if they're in a situation where they have no access to their phone, I feel like there is a withdrawal thing going on, and it just really bothers my husband and me.
I understand.
And I don't. We need to. You know, there has to be a way to take a break from it. You know, a healthy break.
But I need to also stress, I did not disappear. I even have other. I realized on my phone I had Signal and Telegram. Like
which
I'm
you
very
use.
And Viber. Which is activated on my phone,
yeah.
And which a lot of people use now.
Yeah, yeah.
So I felt I it's not like I decided to disappear. From,
yes,
I'm very accessible,
yes.
But only for people who actually want to be
right.
in touch with me.
Right.
So it's not
right.
like I'm making people pay for a phone call
sure,
to call me
sure,
now or
sure.
get in touch.
Sure.
So I can still have video
yeah,
calls
yeah.
normally. And
let's go back a little bit, Fatma. Let's start a little bit more at the beginning. So I know that you were born and raised in Egypt. You were in a German school. At what point in your childhood, early teens, did you realize, actually, this is a bit more than just me liking to sing? Was there a moment where it happened, or was it a gradual thing? Explain that to me, because I don't have that gift, and I don't know many people who do. And I want to just understand how it came to be a viable choice for you as a lifestyle, as a career.
Mm-hmm. I cannot tell that I had a certain point where I realized that's what I want to do forever. I think, as you said, it came gradually. Because at the beginning, when I start, I always sang. I cannot remember a time when I didn't. But it was never like I'm the singer of the family, or I sang with my siblings. That was a very normal thing to do for any child. So I was not a special child or anything when it comes to artistic matters.
So they didn't consider you gifted as a child?
No, like a normal child
yes.
who loves to sing and act and dance, like a lot of children.
Yes, of course.
So that's very normal. Mm. And I think it started getting more serious, or like a serious hobby, when I started being part of the school competitions at school that allowed me also to compete in Germany. So that made a big difference, because that was the moment when I could compare my level to a more international level.
And what age were you at this point?
I started at 13, 14.
Okay.
And that was an interesting point, because it's very easy to be good at something where you don't really have competition. And
of course,
like in Egypt, because like not a lot of people sing opera at that age, and not even at school, it's not really taught so intensely as in a German school. So it was nice to go abroad and see, am I as good? Am I not that good?
People like
Is
you.
It worth, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
My age, and compare my level to them. And that's when things have changed a bit, because I started doing good in these competitions, and that really pushed me to actually enjoy it even more, learn more, and take my lessons seriously.
And did that become a main focus for you as you were growing up, or was it always considered like an extracurricular activity, or did it take over from your studies? Did it become the main focus for
you?
Yeah,
gradually.
Okay.
Because
okay.
I was also playing tennis, which was really important to me, and tennis took over for a very long period in my life. And I thought that was the thing, like that was the main thing that I'm doing, and singing was just a side, until suddenly both were equal, and then suddenly singing took over.
Did you have to make a choice for that?
Yeah, at one
you
point.
You did a choice. You
because
a choice.
My parents were like, do you want to go to tennis, or you want to go do singing, or do you want to, like, there were a lot of training. There was a lot of training happening after school, and I had to make a choice eventually.
How did you make that choice?
I don't know. I felt I enjoyed singing much more than tennis. Like, I love tennis, but I couldn't really maybe reach the level of success that I wanted. Could be because I didn't, I was not good enough. And I enjoyed it as a hobby, while as singing was not only a hobby, it really became my life at one point. And it's become what I'm really interested in, what I want to read more about. I wanted to be with singers and musicians. And like, I didn't have this huge passion with tennis as well. Although I really love tennis, and I've been playing tennis
still
since I was six. Not really.
Not so much.
Not really.
You have the time now.
Not really.
Yeah. And so this was more or less, you were still at school at this point.
Yeah.
So what, 16, 17?
I graduated at 17.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you went to university in Berlin.
Yes.
So you studied music at
yes,
university.
Yes, I did my BA in music. Yeah, this is when I, like, right after my bachelor's degree, that's when I started professionally working. And I wanted to get away from Germany so much. I wanted to, because I've been always in a German system, stuck in a German system, taught by German teachers, and then studied in Germany, lived in Germany. So I needed new blood, as they say.
You needed a new inspiration.
New teachers and a new experience. I felt I also needed some practical experience because university was very theoretical, and it was also a very safe space. Because I could try a lot of things. I'm at school, so you're always protected by teachers and the environment. And I felt I needed to go out there. And that's when I applied to go to La Scala in Italy. They have the Accademia del Teatro alla Scala, where I have studied and worked. They give you an opportunity to work with the great musicians who come and sing at La Scala. You can master classes. I worked with directors, I worked with conductors of very, very high level, and at the same time giving us the chance to sing at the opera house itself, smaller roles,
must have been
medium
incredible
roles. I was only 22 when I got there. I was the youngest, and that was also a problem. I was always the youngest wherever I went.
Is that considered like a school?
It's considered
like a graduate school for singing. Were you with other students like you?
I was with much older students. I was saying that was always not a problem, but it was a huge challenge all my life that I started a lot of things early. Mm. Sometimes I think back with time and I'm like, am I sure I want to do these things so early again? Because I was very young, immature. My voice was not so mature. I always felt I had to do double the work because I was 22. People who were with me on that course were 28, 29, 27, 30. And because they had already finished their masters, they finished like a higher degree in opera. And then they come and have this icing on the cake of La Scala. And then La Scala would expect you to like be all over the world afterwards because you're like a product of their academy. And I only had a bachelor degree. Mm. And I was quite surprised I've been taken.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize how hard it will be until I was part of the program.
And the program was for how long? 3 years?
It was for 2 years.
2 years.
And then I stayed for an extra year to work. It was the best experience of my life, the best years of my life. It's been a dream to live in Italy all my life. And I always wanted to learn the language. So I was so happy.
And now you speak Italian?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So you understand that you don't just sing it.
No, of course.
You understand it.
The operatic language.
And already you had the German from growing up. So there's a lot of opera in German already.
Yes.
So German and Italian are the main opera languages, aren't they?
German, Italian, French, and some Spanish as well.
Right.
These are the main languages. And but of course, there's big Russian repertoire, for example.
Of course.
But see, that's a language, for example, that I worked so hard to learn it.
Yeah.
And I've had Russian workshops. However, I had a big problem with remembering what I'm saying, for example. So I realized I don't want to sing this language as long as I'm not understanding every word because I could not remember every word.
What's your favorite language to sing in? Is there a favorite language?
I think that every language has its beauty. And I enjoy every beauty of each language, I must admit. Sorry.
So another related question. Is there a favorite role that you've played so far that you love the most?
Yes, absolutely. Like, I enjoy them all, but I definitely enjoyed... I loved Nannetta from Falstaff. This is where the last opera that Verdi wrote. I loved this role very, very much.
Why?
It was a young girl who was in love. I could really connect with that girl because I sang the role when I was quite young as well. And she was the youngest in the opera and she was sneaking the whole time behind paravans and behind
closed rooms.
Yeah, in order to see her boyfriend and she doesn't want her family to know. And I thought there was a lot. And you see, that's the beauty about opera. It's like, if I have never done that in real life, I'm doing it in an opera. Yeah. And it's like, I always think we get to live one life, but in opera, I get to live so many different lives. I get to be a queen and I get to be a slave and I get to be a young girl who's hiding from her parents that she's in love with a guy that they are not agreeing with.
So you're an actress.
Absolutely.
It's a wonderful thing.
No,
you escape into different worlds.
You cannot be an opera singer without being an actress.
And what was the role that you found the most challenging?
I did the magic flute a lot. And I think Pamina is not a very easy role. I mean, it's Mozart is wonderful. The music is very accessible. But I think Pamina is a role that develops throughout the opera. She is not the same person she was when she started the first act. And it's like every act, I feel she grows up a few years. So every time I go on stage, I need to have a completely different kind of maturity level in my voice and my body language.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed very much working with several directors about how to access this role and how to change my body language, how to say, how to change how I cannot change the notes, but I can change how I'm performing them,
how you
and
interpret
how I'm singing them.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I love this philosophy in the role.
And what is the role that you haven't had yet that you're dying to
do? So many.
Give me a couple.
I'm dying to die on stage. I haven't done yet. These are the best roles.
Yeah, this is very dramatic, isn't it?
Yeah, opera is dramatic.
Of course.
And you have to take it very serious.
Of course. And then the audience are in your hands, you know, they're just with you along the way. It's amazing.
And again, you see, you get to die and you get to re-die again. It's beautiful. And you get to live. And sometimes in some operas you get to die and people make you live.
So like who Madame Butterfly, for example?
Madame Butterfly, of course, that's
it's a classic, isn't
that's
it?
That's a classic and a beautiful role. And the way she dies is also dramatic because she, like, I'm not going to talk about the opera now, but she actually decides to kill herself. But right before killing yourself, hearing the sound of your child, like, it's very, very dramatic.
It's like a lot of issues there.
Yeah. And or a Traviata, or a Manon, or a Mimi and La Bohème. I think these are all great roles where they die in the end.
When we come back, I talk to Fatma about success and burnout and her album El Nour. That's right after this short break. I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our bonus episodes, available exclusively for subscribers. On each bonus episode, I take a deeper dive into my guests' industries, and I share some extra parts from our conversation. For example, actor and comedian Rami Youssef told me about his thoughts on cancel culture, and ex-anchor and now author Hela Gorani told me her thoughts on the future of journalism. All of these great stories are only available on our bonus episodes, so subscribe now to unlock this amazing extra content. You can subscribe in Apple Podcasts by clicking the subscribe button or on our website and get instant access to all our bonus episodes with a 2-week free trial. And now, back to the show. I wanted to take a minute to tell you about our bonus episodes, available exclusively for subscribers. On each bonus episode, I take a deeper dive into my guests' industries, and I share some extra parts from our conversation. For example, actor and comedian Rami Youssef told me about his thoughts on cancel culture, and ex-anchor and now author Hela Gorani told me her thoughts on the future of journalism. All of these great stories are only available on our bonus episodes, so subscribe now to unlock this amazing extra content. You can subscribe in Apple Podcasts by clicking the subscribe button or on our website and get instant access to all our bonus episodes with a 2-week free trial. And now, back to the show. Welcome back. I'm Malak Fouad and you're listening to What I Did Next. And our guest today is the uber-talented Fatma Saeed. Give me a sense of what your schedule is like. I'm not going to ask you what your day is like because I know that there's no such thing as a common or an average day. But I know that your schedule is planned months and years ahead. Mm-hmm. What is that like to have that kind of lifestyle?
It's a tough lifestyle, but I think thanks to the German education, if I'm a good planner, you said you're a good planner as well.
Yeah.
If I'm a good planner, I think things should fall into place. But I'm generally very anxious about the way we manage opera productions or we put dates for concerts because it's very easy to be talking intensely, for example, about something that will happen in 2-3 years or 4 or 5 years.
But tell me, how did the Corona period affect that world? I mean, did people learn lessons that you can plan and plan, but things happen and things just stop and you have to just figure things out as you go along? Did it have an impact?
Of course, a very strong one. I'm very angry about how a lot of promoters handled the art industry in general. And I thought that it was quite unfair to a lot of musicians.
Tell me more about that.
I was in a very risky situation because I chose a risky path in opera because I chose to be a freelancer, which means I choose my projects, I choose my productions, my roles, I choose when to be where, which is lovely and I think that's luxury. However, because I'm a freelancer, I couldn't do any of that. Like, friends of mine who were part of opera ensembles still earn their money monthly. Friends I know were on furlough. They still had an income.
An income, yeah.
I had zero income almost for a year and a half. So that's also, I never thought that this would happen.
Of course.
But that's the risk I'm taking when I am a freelancer.
Of course. Because the rewards are also greater on the other side.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that was, of course, like quite difficult for me. However, I think I was lucky in a way. I cannot really complain because I had just released my album. So there was a lot happening on social media and I had to really adapt to what do I need to do now that was different from a live performance. And, but then I, with time, a virtual concert is not a replacement.
No, of course not.
So I wanted so much this period to end in order to go back to a live audience again, because it was very difficult.
I want to talk to you about the album, but talk to me more about this lifestyle of the planning and the scheduling, and do you feel that your time is your own? Why? Because you are a freelancer, so you are, I guess, in control more of that.
Yes. So, like in comparison to Corona, usually I have, for example, a schedule where I have a concert every 2 weeks, for example, or every 3 weeks, or sometimes every day. But then I make it a point to rest for a longer period of time. And in between, I'm always studying. I'm studying on the plane. I'm studying at the airport. I'm studying in the taxi. I'm living, as I said, out of a suitcase.
And so, what do you mean by studying? Like memorizing?
Yeah, making sure.
Reading the music.
Yeah, because I don't like to read the music in the concert. Sometimes you're allowed to, but I feel that I love to make myself completely free. And you know, when you know something by heart to the point that if you forget the words, your mouth does it by itself. That's the level I try to always reach when I learn my music. That if I forget, because I was reading this book by Michael Caine. He was talking about his experience in
Michael
acting.
Michael Caine, the actor?
Yes.
Yeah.
He wrote a beautiful book about how like his experience as an actor and how he started out. And then there was a chapter where he talked about how he was memorizing his texts. And then he was saying, unless you know your text like really inside out, you will never be able to be free in the moment when there are cameras and then when there's an audience in theater and people watching you or a big director that wants to spot you, half of your brain is already frozen. So unless the memories in your muscles...
You have to
muscles,
feel like they're your own words.
Almost. Yeah, no, they have to be in your body and then you think about art. But you cannot think about this both in the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the level I try to reach. And in order to do that, you have to say the lines the whole time in your head.
And do you work with someone for that, or do you walk around the house speaking to yourself?
Yeah, I walk around the house. I walk in the street singing in my head. Sometimes that's very bad when you're talking to someone and then you think about text. That's a bit embarrassing, but if you do it in a subtle way, that's okay.
Yeah. I know that you are extremely careful with yourself in terms of how you look after yourself, what they call now self-care, you know, the idea of your diet, your rest, your sleep. Tell me a bit about that, because when we first spoke, when we were planning the interview, I thought about it, but I never realized how important your well-being is to your job.
Mm-hmm.
And you were telling me a lot about your diet, the food you were eating, the things you don't eat, and how it all impacts.
I believe, like with the experience I've had, I think that anything in my daily life that happens affects my voice. The voice is a very, very, very sensitive area in the body that I never got to see. And that's why I have to learn to always feel how it is. Even if it's injured, I need to think or feel that it is injured in order to treat it. And it is affected by a lot of different elements in life. It is affected by the weather, for example, like if it's too humid or if it's too dry. When I travel to a new country and it's suddenly too cold and I'm used to more of a normal weather. AC, I cannot sleep with an AC on because it dries up my voice quite quickly and it takes it a very long time to warm up the next day. Or it can even hurt the vocal folds. How I speak to people. My speaking voice is the number one rule of to keep a healthy voice. If we learned how to sing, I have a technique of how I sing. We never learn how to speak. We just spoke.
That's true.
So we never learn how to use our bodies to speak. And that's why a lot of like professors in universities, they have big vocal problems sometimes because they suddenly feel they need to speak loudly to a big classroom and then, or teachers, and then they realize that they're not using their voice properly. Women who work in kindergartens, they speak in a very high pitch to kids. They're like that.
Yeah.
And that's very unhealthy as well. So we didn't learn how to speak. We just speak very instinctively.
Instinctively, yeah.
And in singing, I had to learn how to speak. Because if I speak for a long period of time, like many years, if I speak wrongly, and that I will never notice if I'm not an opera singer, can have a very, very strong effect to my singing voice. Because the singing, I don't want to compare it with pop or jazz, but in opera, we have to reach very, very high pitches as a soprano, for example, which means that I need very, very, very healthy vocal folds that close perfectly. Like the vocal folds, they do these vibrations, and these vibrations need to close perfectly in order to produce these beautiful high notes without them feeling pushed or anything. In order to do that, the whole body needs to be in perfect shape, because everything I drink, everything I eat affects not the folds directly, but affects everything around them, which are the muscles, the speaking muscles. And also being tense or nervous about anything, of course, it hits the voice, because, you know, when you are nervous, the first thing you realize about yourself is that you're unable to breathe.
And you tense up.
And you don't breathe properly. Yeah. And breathing is the first key to proper singing. If I don't know how to breathe, I won't be able to know how to sing. So there, and of course the emotional factors. I think that if I am sad and if something bad happens that is occupying my mind, it can have a direct effect on my voice and my performance as well. And if something good happens, I always believe that, you know, if you are in love and happy, you don't need these 10 hours to sleep. You will perform perfectly as well. So
you work only once or twice, but the long
term. Yeah, absolutely. Course, absolutely.
You can live on that for a while.
Absolutely. No, but these are temporary things, obviously.
Of course.
But,
and you mentioned to me before, the keeping your immune system optimum is also extremely important.
Absolutely. Yeah. We always say that a singer can notice when he or she are going to catch a cold already a week before the cold.
That's amazing.
I feel it. I know it. I know next Friday I will have a cold and I get it.
That's unbelievable.
It's a bit strange.
It's very strange.
But it's part of being connected to yourself.
Yeah, you're very in tune with your body.
Very, very much.
So you mentioned to me also that a few years ago when you were maybe 24, 25, that you were burning out from the pace of your life and the career. And what did you learn from that? Because I think that was potentially an important pivot for you too.
Definitely.
In terms of how to go forward after that.
I think the pressure back then was very, very high. And this is like what I'm doing is, you know, high performance type of job, which requires my person, not something that I do, but I need myself to do it. I'm not using an instrument to do it.
There's nothing external about it. It's all you.
It's all me.
Yeah.
And I would like to make the comparison with an instrument. Like if a pianist comes, has a performance, he will never come find the instrument, for example, half existent. Or imagine you're taking part, like a tiny part of a violin out of it, the violinist will never be able to play it. In singing, we are never 100%. Like every morning I wake up, I might have a sore muscle. I might not feel great in my voice. I might have eaten something. And I need to adapt to a new body every day. The thing is, when you're under pressure, you stop listening to a lot of body signals. And when you're young, you want to prove yourself. And when you have a lot of competition, you want to prove that you're as good as others.
And also when you're young, you don't know what the limit is.
Yes, and you think you're young, you can do everything.
Think you can just keep going.
That's it.
Yeah.
And how did it manifest itself, the
burnout that you felt? How did it manifest itself?
It took me time to even realize it, because I thought I'd only need a week off and I'd be up and running again. And I realized it took 6 months.
Wow.
And
six
it was
months.
Six months. And I stopped singing for 6 months. I didn't think I would stop for 6 months, but I had to always push my break.
And you weren't practicing? You weren't doing singing at all?
I couldn't.
You couldn't?
My voice wasn't responding anymore. And I remember very
well. You were 25?
I was 25 back then.
And what did you feel? What did you think
It was horrible.
You were anxious, right, about your future then?
Yeah, because I was supposed to rest and I couldn't because I didn't have a voice.
Yeah. So,
not that I didn't, I could speak and everything, but I felt I lost my singing voice. And I just was very, everyone was like, you need a rest. And it's very hard to rest when something like this is happening to you. And
because it's a cycle. You get anxious and then your body can't rest.
Exactly. It doesn't help at all to get better. You have to really detach. And I've never done this before. So, and I was too much in my work. I wasn't sleeping very well. And sleep is major in singing as well. I mean, for everyone, but also for singers. And I remember.
How did you get out of it?
I got out of it when I started believing that my voice will come when it comes and my health comes first. Because I felt very, 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 like with time, when I started to think about what I'm actually going through, I realized with time that it was a burnout because I was not getting better. And I was quite tired for a very long period of time. I wasn't in the mood of doing anything. And I was very depressed because I kept on canceling concerts. Of course, there was on the financial side also big problems because I had counted on very important concerts to live. And I couldn't make any money because I had to continue on canceling. And I had something where no doctor could tell me, you'll be fine in 2 months or you'll be fine. All the doctors told me, have a rest and your voice will come when it comes. So I was like, what, a year, 2 years? But I have performances in a year's time. Will I be ready by then? I need to prepare. And I couldn't tell anymore when I'll be fine again. It was the first time I had to think, like, if I'm not going to be an opera singer, what am I going to do in life?
And what did you think?
It was so hard. I felt so confused because I felt like, what will I will I be an actress? Will I teach? No, I'm 25. I don't want to start teaching. Yeah. I barely know anything about opera.
But it must have been an extremely anxious time.
But it was very hard. But then I started to do, and that I think is what healed me. After a few months, I started doing a lot of things that I always wanted to do and never did.
Like
because I, as I said, I always worked. So
yeah.
I never planned a spontaneous trip in my life. You know, going on EasyJet, I remember I found a trip to Amsterdam with my sister that cost 29 euros. And we just booked
the
trip. I've never done this in my life. And it was beautiful.
And you had no commitments, no schedule.
Exactly. Over a weekend. And we just took, it's very easy to take a plane within Europe. I took a plane with my sister. We spent a weekend in Amsterdam. I've never done this before.
And how did it make you feel?
This is something people do at 19. So
yeah. And how did it make you feel?
I was so happy. Yeah. And I remembered how much I love dancing. And I remember, like, why haven't I ever given dancing that much attention in my life? And I started dancing every day and taking lessons every day.
So your body just relaxed.
Yeah,
you
just
relaxed.
I found the flow in something else.
Yeah.
I found something that I love to do as much as singing in something else, which I've never given enough attention.
Did you turn to things like yoga, meditation?
Not like at one point, but I wouldn't say that this has been the thing that really made the difference.
Yeah.
Like, as I said, I put my energy.
For you.
Absolutely.
Because it was a sense of freedom. When you dance, you feel free.
And I forgot about my voice. It was something I did where I didn't need to think whether, and it was something that I did not in a professional way. So I enjoyed so much doing all the mistakes.
It was for you.
It was for me. Was and for I did a mistake with pride.
Yeah.
And I knew no one is judging me. I don't care if someone says I dance well or I don't dance well. I was learning something new.
And
I was enjoying it.
And you said earlier that you like to do tango.
Yes, so that's what I did.
And that's what you did.
Yeah.
So do you have a regular partner?
No, I dance with my teacher. And in tango, it's beautiful because you go to a milonga and you meet everyone who's into dancing. So you dance with so many different
and
people.
And where do you do that? Where
you are? In Europe. I always have my dance shoes with me.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Like
so
my
that's
dance
your outlet. That's how you relax.
I finish a performance and then I go dancing.
That's amazing. So in each city, you know where to go.
It's very easy online to see where milonga will take place. Like Berlin is a very strong tango city. Milano as well. Paris, you have the milongas in front of the Tour Eiffel.
That's incredible.
And yeah, it's beautiful.
And so every night you can find somewhere to go.
Every night you can find something somewhere.
Wow.
To go.
And where did you learn? In Berlin,
I learned
Berlin.
In Milano. Actually, a very nice story how I came into tango. Because I always danced, but I never learned how to dance tango until I was...
It's a beautiful dance.
I realized that I wasn't dancing before.
Yeah.
And it has become the major dance in my life. So I remember I was in Milano and we were preparing for the Magic Flute with a director. And then in one scene, I was supposed to hug my lover, Tamino, in the opera, my partner. And then I didn't know him so well. So he said, okay, now you're going to run and jump all over him and hug him. And then when he saw that scene, he realized that there is zero chemistry. And he thought, like, it's impossible. I will never allow you to hug someone like that on stage.
You need to connect.
So you need to do something about that. And he actually went to the academy and told them that I want to have tango lessons for these two for about 6 months so they can get to know each other. And it was incredible.
Wow.
And that was actually my entry to tango. And I met my teacher through that course. And of course, it was a beautiful way to get to know the other person as well. And also feel comfortable in your own skin with someone.
Sure.
Because on stage, we are quite physical. So
you feel safe with that person.
Safe in a very beautiful, respectful way. I think that's the best way to teach also girls and boys to get to know each other physically with being respectful to each other. And I'm very thankful to my parents because they have introduced me to dance at 14. So I already knew how to dance waltz and foxtrot and standard tango and mambo and rumba and cha-cha-cha and swing.
Alongside your early singing.
Yeah, and that was beautiful because I always felt comfortable with the opposite sex in that sense.
Yeah.
And it was very, very nice.
Wow,
so,
that's amazing.
So that's how I got into tango.
That's a really important part of your life.
Very important. Yeah,
that's incredible.
But I loved how the director actually thought about tango to make us learn how to get comfortable with each other
physically on stage.
Exactly.
So that's amazing.
No, I'm happy. I still carry it with me.
Yeah.
Even 6 years later, I cannot live without it anymore. So I'm very grateful to that.
Have you ever been to Argentina?
Not yet.
So that's
I'm dying.
Yeah,
to
you've
go.
Got to go there. So tell me, Fatma, about your album.
Yeah.
So I know that it came out last year, right?
It came out.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
I listened to it. I loved it.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, I actually worked to it.
Lovely.
Yeah.
I'm very glad
really,
to hear that.
Really lovely. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That makes me very happy.
No, but tell me about it because I mean, I don't know much about the sort of classical music profession in terms of recording.
Okay, I don't know where to start because the name of the album is El Nur, which is the light. And I wanted to shed light on certain different types of music that maybe other cultures or other people are not very familiar with and show that there are actually very strong connections. And not because I'm Egyptian or singing
Arabic.
Exactly. And not because I sing Arabic means that a French person or a German wouldn't really relate to it.
Yeah.
And that there are a lot of elements that you could use to make people relate to Arabic music and vice versa, which was very important to me. The idea was to put music in the center point and not the words. And it was amazing for me when I did some research on composers who are quite obsessed with the Middle East, how they put Middle Eastern music while they've never been actually to the Middle East and their own imagination about what does it look like, Persia? Or what does it look like?
Their interpretation of it.
Yes, yeah. and their own, like, you know, Carmen, you might know the opera of Carmen, who wrote it is Bizet, Georges Bizet. He has never been to Spain before.
Yeah.
And he wrote the most incredible Spanish piece ever. I love how their imagination, how limitless it was. Now, if you had been to Egypt and you would write about Egypt, you know what you're talking about. But if you've never been, you have a much wider sense of imagination to imagine what it could have been like.
Of course.
And
what about Verdi when he wrote Aida?
Yeah,
had
that
he been
too,
to Egypt?
That too.
He hadn't been to
so,
Egypt,
no?
I think.
I don't think so.
Yeah. They call it Aida in Europe, but Aida in Egypt, right?
Yeah, Aida.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, the same thing I always say, great composers always have that. Muhammad Abdul Wahab, he wrote a lot about pharaonic music. Well, has he ever lived in the pharaonic period? No. But he kind of created a very strong vibe to pharaonic music that makes you think, now when you listen to it, you think pharaohs. But you've never actually lived in the time of pharaohs to think, but he created it.
Yeah.
And I think this is brilliant.
Do you feel like you have the desire or the ability to write? Is that something
write
that attracts
music?
You? Yeah.
I don't think this is my
it's
zone.
Not your...
Maybe not yet.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm more of an interpreter.
And what about crossover? Mm-hmm. Like crossing over to do singing with a pop star, you know,
yeah.
Like the three tenors in the,
yeah.
in the 90s did
yeah.
that. Do you see that as something you'd be interested in? Or
absolutely,
yeah,
absolutely.
That's kind of fun, and
yeah.
you reach an entirely different audience as well.
Very much
yeah.
so. No, I would love to do collaborations with,
like who, for example, who did Lady Gaga do something like that? She's got a voice that can.
Yeah, I think she sang with she sang with this
Tony Bennett.
Tony Bennett.
Yeah.
I think she did an album,
yeah.
if I'm not mistaken. She still performs with
yeah.
them. And
she
I think
has
that's
a voice
wonderful.
Like that could, you know, that could
yeah.
work in a crossover situation.
Yeah.
yeah.
And Ed Sheeran sang with Bocelli.
That's
so
right.
did Beyonce. So I think and Pavarotti, of course,
course,
he started all that. And I loved all his
it
collaborations.
Was it was
with
a really,
Celine Dion.
Exactly.
And,
it was a fun
yeah.
And it attracted a different audience to opera, who then discovered pure opera, you know?
Of course.
For
of course.
That's an interesting thing.
I think it's
thing.
Very important.
Yeah.
And I hope I can do that also with Arabic music.
Exactly.
So that's,
exactly.
yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
So as you know, the podcast is called What I Did Next. What do you feel is next for you, Fatma?
I mean, I hope I can. It's very hard for me to speak about what kind of dream I have next. And as I said, I'm quite anxious about planning ahead. So I always feel also after the experience I've had so far, my small experience I've had so far, I hope that whatever I do next, I can always be happy doing it. And I think that health is so important. So I hope I can keep my health and be happy. And then whatever comes, if I decide to change careers, if I decide to do something else, stick to what I'm doing, I hope I can always do it with passion and be happy, because there are so many unhappy people in this like really like the Pagliacci, as you say, in opera. You go on stage, you make people laugh,
yeah,
or
yeah.
you touch people what you're doing,
yeah.
or you have a smile on your face, you seem to be successful and or have a lot of money. And I've met a lot of people, and me myself, sometimes I go back to my room and I could be quite unhappy sometimes, or lonely.
Oh yeah, everybody.
And when you're on stage, you're quite alone,
yes.
as well. So I hope that whatever I do, I can always still be happy and keep my drive and whatever I'm going to do in life. I think
because
that's
you're clearly very passionate about what you're doing.
Yeah, and this
you
passion
keep
needs
that.
To stay.
Yeah.
And in order to stay, it's important to have a break, to miss singing a bit.
Of course.
Go back to
of
it.
Course.
And also work on yourself to develop. I think I hope so much that I can have a long career. But my sister was just telling me, life doesn't get better than this moment we're living right now. Like tomorrow is a new day and we'll see how it goes, but it won't get better than right now. So it's always very hard for me to think about the future. I
yeah.
try not to think, especially after the Corona experience.
You want to live in the present as much as possible.
I think
yeah.
we should.
Yeah.
I would rather have that.
Fatma, it was an absolute joy to have you on the show.
Malak, I didn't feel the time. So thank
so
you.
Glad you came on the show. Honestly, this was a real treat for me. Thank you for listening today. This episode of What I Did Next was brought to you by ANT Media with me, Malak Fouad, and is co-produced by Chirag Desai. Please remember to follow us on Twitter and Facebook for updates on the show. Just search for What I Did Next. We are now also on Twitter, so please follow us there too. I'd really appreciate it if you could leave us a review in your podcast player. This boosts the show's ratings and helps us reach new potential listeners. Our next episode will be in 2 weeks' time. We really hope you can join us then.